there are some people that were really cold, and they were doing an amazing job of, getting us, dried out and warmed up and feeding us, and spent a long time there just trying to regroup. And me and Mike left out of there. He had like 3 emergency blankets wrapped around him because he was pretty much hypothermic at that point. And we wrapped him up with emergency blankets, put on his vest, and out we went.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. I'm Eric Dieter, your host, and today I have with me a returning guest, Troy Pruitt. We have corresponded. We've talked on social media, and we were supposed to meet in person, and we ended up just passing in the night. So we'll get into that story later. But I've known Troy, followed him on social media. He's done some epic stuff, and so I'm really excited to have him come and talk about stuff that the things that he has been doing since the last time he was on the podcast. And so welcome to the show, Troy.
Thanks for having me. It's awesome to be back.
Yeah. So give us a quick, I know we talked about this before when you were here, but give kind of a quick thing about how did you get started as a runner?
How did I get started? Well, probably 3 years ago, was just grossly out of shape, and decided that I'm ex-military. So in the military, we ran. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to start running. And I did it. I was kind of funny. I was having this conversation with somebody just the other day. I started on a greenway. And it was close to home. It was a little asphalt loop on the greenway. Mm-hmm. And I did that for months and months and months. And there was one day that I just happened to be paying attention. I was like, there's a trail. And it was off the greenway, and it ran right down by the river. And that was the first day I decided I'm going to run on that trail. And I did. And then each day after that, every other day, I always went to that trail. And that's how I started running, just to try to shed some pounds, get back in shape. And then that one day I stumbled across the trail and decided I was going to run on it. And I've been stuck on trails ever since.
Yeah. So how did you find out? I mean, for a lot of us, I mean, for most of my life, I knew, there's a little bit about trail running, but I mean, never knew that people ran longer than a marathon on trails. And I didn't even know anybody would run 100 miles.
It's no,
just one of the things I didn't pay attention to until recently. So, yeah. So when was it you found out about like events that you could go to?
I don't even know. Probably bored on social media. I have no idea. I mean, I was like the lone, I would run by myself, and I did that for a year and a half, probably. I didn't run with anybody. I was kind of, as I said, I was kind of probably searched around social media and kind of seeing that there were trail groups, and you start, friending people and you get involved in groups, and then, okay, they're all going to a race. And I was like, race, that sounds fun. And I don't even know how it started. I just stumbled my way into it. And to this day, I really can't tell you an honest answer how I stumbled upon this whole ultra thing. It just kept building and building and building. My first race was David's Trail, 25K. It was last January. And
so you haven't been racing for very long. You've been running for a while, but you haven't been racing for very long then.
Correct. Yeah. I guess it wasn't this January, but the January before. And then, my very next race was Outlaw. I did the Outlaw half, and that's where I met you.
Okay.
And then I did a 35K. Then I signed up for a 50K. And well, actually, I signed up for Outlaw 100 2 days after I run the Outlaw half, my second trip. So,
okay. So we did meet in person at the Outlaw.
You were pacing.
I was pacing Abby.
You were Yes. You were
pacing Abby. And yep. Yeah. Okay. So, but yeah, but I didn't know anybody when I went down there. And so like everybody I met was new. And so I don't recall actually because I met like all kinds of people and I was overwhelmed. So
that was my second trail race ever. So I was just letting it sink in, you know, that's when I realized that these people out here doing this crazy stuff that,
well, especially that course.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
And then, I went from there. I signed up for Outlaw 100 like 2 days after the half, and then I signed up for Ozark Trail, and then I just kept signing up, and
yeah. And you'd signed up, if I remember it, last year you had 3 100 mile races on your schedule.
I did.
and was the first one our Ozark Trail?
Yes. My first 100 attempt was Ozark Trail 100. So
okay. So what made you decide to do the hundreds? I mean, you went from a 25K to, like, oh yeah, I think I can do 100. What was your thought process when you did that?
Because I watched people do it. I watched the process of it. I saw that it could be done, and it looked just the way you immerse yourself into that. And it was just so appealing to me. It's just one of those things. I want to experience everything I possibly can. And just watching those people go through that experience, it's a life-changing thing, you know, and it's raw, it's emotional. It's just, you're spent. It just completely strips you down to what you're made of. And something about that appealed to me. And I decided that I'm going to do it. I might as well try it.
Yeah. So you said your first Ozark Trail was your first 100, and what did you learn from that? I mean, I know you had a DNF. Well, I mean, my first 100 attempt, I had a DNF as well. So, yeah. I mean, so that happens to a lot of us.
So what did I learn from Ozark Trail? That's a technical course. It's rugged.
It's very rugged. Yeah.
It's rugged. It's remote. The first 14 miles, I was on top of the world, and I was right on. I had great crew, great pacers. I mean, I was ready for that race, and it was hot that day, mm-hmm. November 7th, was not prepared for it to get warm that day. I knew the trail was going to be covered with leaves. I didn't know they were going to be a foot deep. So literally you were on guard, on alert, tense, that entire, each step, you didn't know what you're stepping on.
Because the trail's rocky.
And then
all the rocks were hidden by leaves. And so you were stepping down and had no idea what was it going to happen when your foot hit the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're just on constant alert. And, but you know what? I had a pace chart, and I had it where I could see it, and I was clicking it off. I was ahead of time, going into the first crew aid station where I see my crew for the first time at mile 14. And, I was on top of the world, and I was like, this is a good day. And I had been experimenting with some things going into that race as far as nutrition. And I was using a thing called a superstarch called UCAN, which it's getting a lot more popular these days. But I was working it. I kind of mix it into a slurry. Okay. And I had one soft flask full of Tailwind, and I had one soft flask full of that UCAN. And it really does a good job at leveling off your blood sugar levels and stuff like that. So it just keeps you from bonk. So
it doesn't spike right. your blood sugar. Right. It's more right. of a,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Because yeah. a lot of the stuff that you take in packets or whatever, it's just pure sugar in your blood. Exactly. It spikes your blood sugar and then you crash.
Exactly. So, and I hadn't really been hitting it much at first 14 cause I was feeling good. And right up out of that aid station was a huge climb. And about halfway up that climb, I took a big swig of that Ucan. I just, you know, it hit me. And the rest was left on the trail for the next probably, let's see, I didn't see my crew again for another 26 miles.
Wow. So at 14 miles and then yeah. another 26. So yeah. like 40 miles in before you saw your crew again.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't have any crew help, that I was horribly sick. My stomach turned and I couldn't get on top of calories. Everything I was putting in was coming right back out. And I learned I don't even know if I learned a lesson because I'd been training with UCAN the entire time, but just on that day, it just hit me. And it was to the point where at one point I couldn't even stand to smell it anymore. I had to take it out, dump out my flask and use my bladder. Every time I smelt that cranberry, I was just like, oh, so
wow.
Yeah. I ended up timing out at mile 32, I think. So, yeah.
So do you know, did you ever figure out what was the difference? I mean, if you were using it in training, do you know what might have made the difference?
I have no idea. I don't know if it was possibly the heat, maybe just the nerves of taking on my first 100. I don't know. I mean, to this day, I haven't opened a container of Ucan. but I have no idea. And I just kept pushing and kept getting slower. And just like, you know, when things start just compounding. And, you know, there was one point where we had to cross a pretty deep, swift stream. And we had to cross it on a log. And I get over there and we had to climb up over like a root ball to get back on the trail. And I dropped my trekking poles in the water.
Oh my goodness.
I had to basically swim for my trekking poles.
Because they were floating down the stream, probably. Yeah, yeah.
They were floating down the stream. I was like, what else could go wrong? it just turned into a death march and, you know, lots of elevation. There was really, I knew I was pushing a cutoff. And I never really come back around. I couldn't get calories in me. The aid stations, I would just, you know, take in some ginger ale, try to get some liquid calories, because anything I would try to put in was just coming right back out. And yeah, I timed out. So I think I timed out about 17 minutes, I think.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I actually rolled into that aid station and the aid station captain said, "Are you done?" I said, "No. Done," because I was, you know, I was gonna keep going. I mean, it was because I had about 8 more miles than I was picked up my first pacer, you know. Mm-hmm. I just knew that entire time that I was struggling, you know, if I could get to my crew, they're gonna fix me. Because I had Nicole Fleming, I had Gary Shaw, I had Cindy Rykoff. They were all waiting for me at like mile 40. I said, I just got to get to them. I get to them and I'm good. Mm-hmm. I had all my faith was in just getting to my crew at mile 40, and I just never made it. So, yeah.
Well, and those guys would be, I mean, they would know what to do and they'd be able to help you out. Yeah,
exactly. I was out there just wandering around in the woods at that point. I got to get to them, you know, but yeah, that was, and then I sat on the log of shame at that aid station for probably about an hour and a half before somebody came and got me. Cause there was like, there's no cell service. So it was all ham radio operators and stuff like that. And they were, of course, they were at the mile 40 aid station. Cause they were getting ready to, you know, should be rolling in.
You're supposed to be there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it was probably closer to 2 hours. I sat on what I nicknamed the log of shame. So, yeah.
Well, then what was your second 100? I mean, because you had like three of them scheduled within like
yeah.
three and months, wasn't it? Or
Yeah. And see, after that, I sort of wanted some, I wanted some vindication. Mm-hmm. And there was a race the very next weekend, up in the Dixon, Missouri area called the Bad Dog Ultra. And, they had several different distances. They had 100-mile distance, but they had a 50. And I said, you know what? I need some vindication. I know I can do this stuff. So I entered the 50, and it was a week later after that.
So yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's, yeah. I can kind of see where this is headed.
Yeah. That was a whole nother level of crazy. So yeah. I kind of went into that race. I just wanted to work on nutrition, you know, mm-hmm. just right. to see if I could kind of sort it out. I was still kind of mentally sitting on the log of shame mm-hmm. and on the OT, you know.
Yeah.
I just wanted to try it. And it was an out and back. It was like a 5-mile out and back. Most of it on gravel, and it rained all day.
Oh, wow.
And then come the flash flooding. So they changed the course. So the 5-mile out and back turned into like a 3.5-mile out and back. So they shortened it even more.
Okay.
So it was just back and forth. So it was just mentally, it was just like, it was draining. It mm-hmm. was cool. You got to see everybody.
Right. Especially on an out and back, you get to see people face to face. Yeah.
Yeah. And, then I kind of knew I was going to finish that race. I kind of wasted a lot of time in the aid station, cause you went back to the school, high school every time. That's where the timing was. And then that's where you had all your stuff set up. They had all the food inside the high school gym.
Okay.
So I kind of wasted some time. You know, it wasn't a matter of how fast am I going to do this race. It was a matter of, I'm just going to finish this race. I need the time on beat. I need to see what works for me as far as nutrition, because what I had been banking on wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And on through the night, then the severe weather came, then the tornadoes. It just turned in. I finished my 50 miles doing loops inside of a high school gymnasium.
Oh my goodness. Because it was, they have a tornado warning and have everybody.
Yes. Two laps around that high school gym made up a mile. And I was sitting at 48 miles when they closed the course. And I was like, I'll take my chance with the tornado. I do not but want to walk around. But I ended up doing it and I finished it. Hats off to the 100-milers, because they did that gym all night long. So that would have been it was kind of nice. I took off my shoes, got my feet dry, put on some recovery sandals, and just walked laps. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
but yeah, that was my first, that was my vindication after my OT failure. So,
okay. Okay. So then was your next one, the Outlaw?
No, the next one was Last Chance 100.
Last Chance 100. Okay.
And it was at Stockton Lake, which is just kind of about an hour and a half north or so. But it's a 10-mile loop. It was a fun race. I went up there and I did.
Oh, I lost him. Lost you for a second.
Yeah. I think it's my battery. I might have to get a charger here in a second.
Okay.
I went up there and did tons of miles on that trail. Before
the race.
Yeah, because it's just a little over an hour away. So I was like, yeah, I got this one, you know, and did a ton of miles up there. The race was the day after Christmas.
Okay.
We were blessed with amazing weather that day for the day after, because it could have been anything. And it was highs in the 50s. It was sunny. It was just a beautiful day to run. And I started it like any other, and just, I was doing good and I was feeling strong. And about mile 40, I started getting a pain, almost like a shin splint, but it was lower, kind of right above my ankle.
Okay. And
that's all right. I just kept going. And I kept going, kept going, kept going. I was getting slower. It was starting to get a little worse. Of course, you know, we just do what we do and you just kind of compartmentalize that and you keep going. I picked up my first pacer and did 20 miles with him. And by the end of that, I think it was right around mile 60 or so. It got pretty bad. I couldn't flex my foot. I couldn't climb. I would kind of go up little climbs and come right back down. I had no movement. My leg was cold, kind of lost some feeling. And, after the sixth loop, I got back to start finish and I kind of made a mistake and sat down. And at that point it had gotten cold. And on that last loop, I didn't take a jacket and I was cold anyway. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and just, I quit. So, it was a matter of, the pain had gotten pretty significant at that point. But
and
I feel like
it wasn't one of those pains that you could work through and it would go away.
We tried rolling. We tried everything. I had a bunch of people working on me after each loop and it just never got better. And, at that point I thought it was something serious. And at that point I pulled the plug. I just didn't feel like it was a smart thing, you know, to keep going on. And it was a tough decision. I probably sat there for probably way longer than I should deciding if I wanted to, you know, pull the plug. And then, and then finally I just hit my watch and said, I'm done. So, then I went to the doctor, ended up had, exertional compartment syndrome of my anterior tibialis. So it was a pretty significant thing. It, took quite some time to get over. So yeah, I had that going into Outlaw.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Outlaw was your next one.
Yeah. And so I finished 100K at Last Chance. And then I really didn't have anything until Outlaw. And of course my training was limited because I had, you know, I had a pretty significant thing going on. And I wouldn't say I was unprepared going into Outlaw. I just feel like I wasn't really prepared mentally, just because I hadn't had those training miles going.
Mm-hmm. So, and Outlaw is a significant. I mean, Outlaw is a tough course.
And at that point, I'd bumped up to the 135.
You'd be yeah.
At that point, I decided let's bump up to the 140, you know, let's bump up to the 135 because it'll be cool. And you got 48 hours to do it. You can hike it and that's it. You know, yeah. And oh, let's try it. So, and the week prior when we started seeing what the weather was going to do, I decided I should probably go back down to the 100 because, you know, weren't trying to look too far ahead, but we knew that the weather was going to be significant. It was going to be bad. It was going to be cold. But here we go. So,
yeah. And it was one of those times when the cold came down from Canada and just kept going south. I mean, it was cold for down, you know, exactly. Texas was getting ice storms and
yeah,
Outlaws in Oklahoma, which is, I mean, normally it's not that
this,
cold.
This like record stuff, you know, this yeah. doesn't happen, you know? So it was significant and I had, you know, a pretty good crew lined up. I had, you know, you were coming down to pace me. I had Melissa Bland, was also pacing me. Scott Bailey was going to pace me a little bit. So, you know, once again, I had just a dynamite crew lined up to help me get through that race. And, it was so cold. It was,
yeah.
Anybody that withstood that, you know, race for, I mean, my hat's off to anybody that towed the line that day. Because it was significant.
Yeah, it was significant cold. Well, and it was not so much the cold, it was the ice, because it had, they'd had an ice storm on the course like a couple days before, or it was still there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a lot of ice.
Yeah. We had one of the cabins, you know, there right at the start finish line. And I kind of woke up late and realized what we were getting ourselves into. And I was kind of late to the start. You know, I was kind of sandbagging around. I was like, okay, you know, take that first step out the door, because because it's go time, you know. And I was like the last one across the start finish line to the start, and I don't know, I don't really think I was trying to make up time. I was just trying to get into a groove, and I turned my ankle about 2 miles in. So, and I turned it good. I was running with somebody, and you know, I went all the way down, and he said, "Hey, that looked bad." I said, it was pretty bad, but I'm all right. So I just kept going. And, I probably turned my ankle probably 8 more times before I got to Shorty's.
Okay.
Because I had lost all stability. Mm-hmm. And, with that terrain, with those rocks, with that ice, I mean, anytime I just kept turning it, and I really didn't know what to do. All I knew was just get to Shorty's and just see what happens, you know? And I got to Shorty's on that loop, and my savior, Brian Scantlin, he had a roll of Coban, and we taped it up real tight. And I was like, well, that'll get me to the start finish. And, of course, it's, you know, still real stretchy. And, leaving Shorty's is some of the, I think, the hardest terrain on that course. You had a big climb up out of Shorty's, you know, a lot of big rock and stuff like that. And I probably turned it probably 5 more times getting back to the start finish. Yeah, I knew it was pretty significant. But at that point, I mean, you got 48 hours. I'm just going to try to gut it out. You know, that on top of just the race management issues everybody was facing, because everything was freezing up. All your electrolytes were froze. Everything. I mean, it was just the whole, it trying to, you know, process that just entire event with the weather, and you know, it was tough.
Yeah. The temperature was down around 4 degrees, if I remember right, during the day. Yeah. And that was not, you know, that was not nighttime. That was daytime.
Yeah. And I got back to start finish. I think I ate a burger. I was like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little bit better. I got Scott Bailey. I had a bunch of athletic tape, and we just completely taped it up to where I couldn't move it. And I set out on the 7 mile loop, and I didn't turn it. I was still moving pretty decent. I mean, I was moving decent enough at that point. I wasn't trying to do ultra math, because we had 48 hours. You just got to stick out. And I finished that 7 mile loop, and I got back, and it's like, well, this is what I'm gonna have to deal with. And then I headed out on my next big loop, and it got cold, because I wasn't moving fast. And that was mentally maybe one of the hardest things I've had to deal with, because I couldn't move fast, and I knew I had to keep moving to stay warm. Mm-hmm. And I had swapped my shell out at the start finish after the first 7 mile loop. And I'd started out wearing a Gore-Tex shell, and for whatever reason, I decided I wanted to swap it out to another shell I had, and it wasn't breathing at all. And I was just soaking wet. And I knew I was wet and just not moving fast. And it kind of beat me up a little bit. And then I took a really nasty fall down the Devil's Butt Crack there going into Shorty's, which is even on a good day,
that's steep. That's a steep downhill.
And you know, I had trekking poles, but they were of no use because they wouldn't stick. You know, you just kind of, you started down that, and you kind of lined up with the tree. So, you know, if you fell down, you know, the tree would stop you and kind of down it. And I was trying to get to Shorty's before dark. and I was probably trying. I was probably exceeding my capabilities at that point. And I took a pretty nasty fall, and I fell the majority of the way down that thing. But I kind of regrouped, and I got to shorties, and realized that I was really cold and wet, and got everything stripped off, and they tried to get us all. And there were probably like three or four of us in there at that time. And I kind of picked up a friend. His name's Mike. He's from Illinois. We kind of finished that little senior section together. He was already talking about DNFing. So he was like, I'm done. And we just kept going. And we were just kind of just a death march at that point. And there was one runner that passed us that had fell in the water on one of the water crossings.
Oh, wow.
And he was so cold. And the only thing that was, he was just running to stay warm. And it got pretty serious that night. Mm-hmm. You know, we got into shorties, and there were some people that were really cold, and they were doing an amazing job of, you know, getting us, dried out and warmed up, and you know, feeding us. And spent a long time there just trying to regroup. And me and Mike left out of there. He had like three emergency blankets wrapped around him because he was pretty much hypothermic at that point. And we wrapped him up with emergency blankets, put on his vest, and out we went. That was a long, long stretch. That stretch from shorties back to the start finish was tough. And I probably fell three or four more times. It just compounded. It just fell apart. And we got back to start finish, and I sat there and ate another cheeseburger. And at that point, there were probably three or four of us in there that were like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. At that point, I decided, okay, I kind of consulted with Melissa, and I was like, I'm going to drop to the 50. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, get changed, take a nap, get up in the morning, and I'm going to finish the 50, and I'm going to call it a day. And that was the plan. And at that point, you had gotten there because yeah. you were going to pick me up in the morning, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I woke up that morning and the snow was coming down, and I could put zero weight on my ankle. And I just, at that point, I was like, this is, I'm done. So
yeah.
Then it turned into that. I can't believe, you came down all this way.
Yeah.
Then all started hitting you, and you're like, you worked so hard, had so many people involved in this.
That's the hard thing about a DNF that's a big deal, especially yeah. when you get injured. I faced that when I was, when I did my 100. I had people who, they spent their own money to come down, and be with me. And I was having issues right at 60 miles. And I'm like, I don't want to let these people down.
Yeah. I know as well as everybody else, if you commit to something like that, that chance is always there.
Yeah.
But until you're that runner that is sitting there making that decision to stop, it really doesn't come full circle. So,
And for, being on the other side of it, I was like, hey, stuff happens. Anytime anybody who signs up to crew or pace somebody who's running 100 miles, I mean, we all know, we've all been there, and it's like, there's things happen, and you roll with it. And
it was a long ride home. It was a long, slow ride. Because at that point, I was looking at, I had just DNF'd three straight 100 attempts. So that was a tough time. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to quit, but I was really having significant doubts, because everything went wrong. And I think I probably learned more in those three DNFs than I would have if I would have finished those races. And that's something that I can take away, because in every DNF and in every failure, if you pay attention, you're going to learn a ton. And I learned a lot over those 3 months. So,
yeah. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you took away from that? Just if you could kind of sum up.
Just all the cliche things, you know. If it can happen, it will. And you just got to be honest with yourself. You can't ever really go into a 100-mile race extremely 100% confident you're going to finish it. And I think you have to go into it with a little bit of fear and a little bit of anxiety, because there is that fear of unknown. And if you go into it overly confident, I think you set yourself up. I think you should be a little anxious. I think you should be nervous a week out. I think you should be worrying about all those variables that can happen. I think you need to let those play out in your mind. And I think it that's something I didn't do, because I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. I just went into like, yeah, I got 48 hours. How hard? I can walk for 48 hours and finish this race. Well, yeah, you can, unless you turned your ankle a dozen times.
Yeah.
And 6 inches of snow and 8 degrees, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I learned that I probably quit at last chance. Once I really kind of go back and analyze that, I really can't come up with a reason why I didn't continue. Even though, I mean, the pain was significant, but I was still moving. Mm-hmm. I had plenty of time. I was doing ultra math, and I was like, if I stay at this pace, I can make the cutoff, you know, but at that, I think quit. And I think that's something that, it was hard to accept, but I really couldn't look at any other way that, you know, I quit. So, mm-hmm. that was a big pill to swallow, because, you know, that's something that, I think a lot of us are scared to admit that we don't quit. You keep going. It's one foot in front of the other. And then when you mm-hmm. finally get in a situation where I quit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's an eye opener. So what I learned is just try harder. That's basically, you know, all of it summed up into a nutshell is just keep trying, until you can't try anymore. And don't sign up for so many races.
One of the things that I'd read, there was somebody who'd written about preparing for 100 miles, and they said to make a list of, you know, look ahead and see what are some of the things that typically cause people to decide to quit, and kind of make that decision beforehand. This is okay. I've got to be here. If I'm not at this point where I'm going to seriously damage my body, you know, I'm going to keep going. And uh-huh. So, you know, those making those decisions ahead of time, because when you're in the, you know, when you're in the pain cave and it's late yeah. at night and cold, I mean, it's like, yeah. it's easy for your mind to go, yeah, no, I'm done.
Yeah. yeah, you're done. I mean,
and it's a natural, I mean, it's a natural thing to do.
Yeah. You know, and I had talked to several people, and, you know, a lot of people that had experiences, with finishing 100-mile races, and you know, one of the key things they kept telling me, under no circumstances do you entertain a DNF unless your crew's involved, unless you know someone is there that knows the situation personally and knows you and sees how you're doing, you know, don't entertain it. And I think that was really good advice, because I think I quit before I entertained. I brought anybody else in that could kind of set me down and say, you're not done. So that was something I'll probably, you know, store up here. Is just under no circumstances entertain the fact that you're going to quit. And, you know, until you get there, and then have somebody that you have all faith and confidence in that makes that decision. Because I finally, you know, the first, I think at Last Chance was the first time I ever hallucinated at a race. I saw cats all night.
You say you saw cats?
Cats everywhere, all night. And now that I look back on it, it was my light with the leaves everywhere. It looked like cat heads. But anyway, I kept seeing cats on, and that I was just like, this is crazy. I was in a lot of pain, kept seeing all these cats. I'm cold. I've learned out of all those, I just learned how to manage mistakes better because you're gonna make them. There's always something that is going to come up that you didn't account for. And once you put yourself through that and the aftermath of that, when you try to process and accept that failure, I think it's a valuable lesson. So,
Yeah. So, and you just finished, we talked about this before I started recording, but you just finished the Heartland 50 and you signed up for the Heartland 100.
Yeah. Well, I actually just finished the Lake McMurtry 100K.
You did the Lake McMurtry. Yeah, I forgot about that. I saw, because you had a, even after, I mean, once you recovered from your ankle injury, you were like lined up again for racing. So
yeah.
So the 100K at Lake McMurtry, what was that like? I had some friends who ran 50K there.
Awesome race. The Outlaw group, you know, Alicia and Jeremy put on an amazing race, no matter where it's at. But we were blessed with good weather, a fun trail. I thought it was going to be flatter than what it was. So
yeah, I had heard people say that it was fairly flat, you know, but then, you know, race directors' opinions of fairly flat is like, yeah.
Right. Especially Jeremy's with Outlaw. So everything flat compared to Outlaw. But no, that was a big race for me. I had never set out to run 100K yet. So it was that distance that I got to and failed at Last Chance. Mm-hmm. So going into that, it was a really important race for me. It was a great buckle. But besides the great buckle aspect of it, it was just really important that I finished that race. Just to set the stage for what at that point I've already been signed up for, you know, this year, which I'm signed up for probably 10 more races. So
that's still a pretty good schedule. Yeah, then
it was very important to me, you know, to finish that race, and just went into it really kind of lighthearted. Went into it just thinking I was gonna have fun. I had 18 hours to do 100K. It didn't matter if I used 17 hours and 59 minutes and 38 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, that was not a variable I was concerned about. It was, I want to finish this race. And just ended up being a beautiful day. Kind of fun trails, kind of mountain bike-ish, which was kind of irritating after a while, all the little downs and stuff like that. But just slugged it out. Didn't have any issues. Had some heat issues. It got pretty hot and windy that day. So I always kind of struggle with hydration. So I had to stay on top of it and just had a great race. I just played it conservative, had fun. And I finished it. I finished it 17 hours and 47 minutes. So
wow. And that's
to get a bit of it. So
yeah, that's a decent, I mean, you got to kind of keep moving, but that's a pretty good, especially if it's got some elevation to it.
Yeah. It ended up being about 5,300 feet of vert in the 100K, which is really wasn't prepared for that, you know, going into it, but I kept looking at my watch going, there's more elevation than what they said there is here. But no, it was great. Great aid stations. They kept us going. Learned that sometimes the most, like, the strangest you could think of is your savior. Cause I rolled into Scott Bailey's aid station. I was seriously dehydrated. I was tired of drinking what I was drinking. He's like, "You want a Gatorade?" I was like, "Gatorade? I'll take a Gatorade." And it completely turned my race around. Like, after I carried that Gatorade for like 2 miles, and that was the best thing I'd had all day. I was like, milk. It was like mother's milk. It was the best thing I've ever had, and it completely turned my day around. And at that point, I knew I was going to finish. I think about mile 50, I knew I was good and just cruising. And I actually kind of pulled off some, you know, negative splits there at the end, because I realized I had probably played it a little bit too conservative, so I had enough some time. But no, I finished DFL, got a cool plaque, got a good buckle, and walked away with a 100K finish. And I was super proud of that.
So. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was just a few weeks later, then you ran a 50K.
Yeah, that was probably weeks ago. And after Outlaw, I sat down with my coach. We don't want to call him a coach because he says he doesn't coach, but I've been working with Gary Shaw. And we sat down and he's like, "We need to pick 100. That we're both confident you can finish." Mm-hmm. So I was kind of looking ahead. I was looking at Prairie Spirit. He was like, "Nope, that's too close." So,
and Prairie Spirit has, I mean, that would be a 100-mile treadmill, because it's a rail to trail. I mean, it's,
I got to crew a great friend of mine. Her name is Jill Brockman. And she did it in 22 hours and something. This year, she smoked it. That was her first 100. She actually DNF'd at Last Chance at about mile 70 something, and went into Prairie Spirit as her second 100, and she just smoked it. So that was
rails to trails. I mean, I love the concept, but I mean, it's there's no turns, and it's such
a fun race, though.
I would do it for the people, but
yeah,
it's, great, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things I said I'm never going to do, but you know, it's
one
of the, you know what happens when you say I'm never doing that.
So we, you know, we sat down and looked, and I was looking at Pumpkin Holler. I wanted probably, I didn't really want rails at that point. I was looking at the fall rails, the trails. I was like, I really don't want to do that. I want some hills, you know, and all things kind of pointed to Heartland. Then I kind of started research and talked to people that run the race, and everybody loves it. A lot of people struggle out there, the exposure, and just,
yeah,
think it'll kind of creep up and bite you with the elevation that you're not really prepared for and the exposure and stuff like that. But it was gravel roads, and I run a bunch of gravel around home for training. I was like, I think I want to do Heartland. And that's what we settled on. And,
For people who don't live in the Midwest, Heartland is in in Kansas, is what they call the Flint Hills, and it's wide open spaces and hills, and the roads go straight up and down the hills. And so gravel roads straight up and down hills.
Yeah. So yeah, he gave me a 7.5 month training plan to get ready for Heartland. All my crazy idea races thrown into it. So a whole lot of work went into it, and that's what we settled on. And then my head started spinning, and I started, you know, looking at stuff. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Then I kind of realized that there was a thing called the Heartland Challenge. So if you complete the spring 50K or 50 mile, and then you complete the fall 100 mile, that's the Heartland Challenge, and you get a really sweet buckle. So I was like,
is that different than the regular 100-mile buckle?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. It's got like a picture of a buffalo. It's got like a 50K finisher and a 100-mile finisher. It's just a really cool buckle. And I was kind of looking ahead at my training plan, and I had a 30-mile run scheduled that day. And I was like, well, why not run Heartland 50K? Then I'm eligible, you know, for that challenge buckle in October. So that's what I did. I entered it, went up there and did it just this last weekend. What just amazing race, great race directors, just to take in that race was something. Cause I'm used to single track. I'm used to the Ozarks, you know, trees, rocks, hills. And that was something I was completely out of my element out of. And it was beautiful.
You can see for miles. I mean,
yeah, that kind of messes with you a little bit. Cause you're on this gravel road. You can see up the horizon just as far as you can see. And that's the same gravel road I'm on. So, but it was a great race. I finished it in 7 hours and 50 minutes. I wasn't trying to break any records, but I'm kind of a slow guy anyway, so I actually PR'd my 50k and just had a blast. So that's where I'm at. So
that's where you're at. Cool.
Yeah,
cool. So you got the Heartland 100 coming up in
October 9th.
October 9th. Okay.
Yeah. So between now and then, I got a race coming up in 2 weeks. I'm doing the Flower Moon 50 miler.
Okay.
So that's down at Osage Hills State Park outside of Bartlesville, Oklahoma. It's another one of the outlaw races.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on schedule for the 15th. Looking forward to it. Got a huge group of us from the local ultra community here that's all going down and going to run it together. So it's going to be a blast.
Well, there's going to be a lot of people from Kansas City who are doing that as well. So.
Yeah, this, you know, the whole Missouri, you know, Kansas and Oklahoma group, it's strong. It's strong.
Yeah.
And you think faces and made a lot of friends and just awesome people. So any of these races like that is just going into it. You can't help but be excited just because you're going to see everybody. It's going to be a good atmosphere. It's going to be fun. So I don't really have any expectations going into it. Just going to go run it. So,
mm-hmm. And is it, I think it's a combination of trails and roads, if I remember right.
Yeah. It's a little technical. It's a little rocky. It's a little hilly. It's beautiful from what I've seen. I know the race canceled last year and the group from here went down to the state park and actually did the virtual on the course and, they just loved it. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, cool. Yep. So are you doing, are you doing the Dark and Dirty 50K?
Yes. Yeah. So, after Flower Moon, 50 mile, I actually got a break. I'm free until June 26th. And then I'm doing the Nighthawk 50K.
Okay. And you're doing the Dark and Dirty as well?
Yes. And then July 10th is Dark and Dirty. I have to look at my schedule. I don't know. It gets kind of cloudy after that because there's just boom, 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 a bunch of races. I'm actually going to crew and pace at Honey Badger. I've thrown my hat into the ring for that. Don't know why I even want to experience that, but it should be fun. I don't know what's after that. Probably another race, but don't really know what I got going on in August. But I'm fairly confident I got a race in August. And then October 9th, I'm actually doing the Hawk 50. Okay. I'm actually for it. It's a deferral over the cancellation from last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm smart. I wanted to bump up to the 100, but I didn't do it. So I'm kind of sticking to my plan and
The Hawk 50 is a good, it's a good 50 mile because they give you the same cutoff as they do for the 100. Yeah. They run a marathon, a 50 mile and a 100 mile on the same course.
Yeah.
And so you have the same time. I think it's 32 hours to finish 50 miles. So that was my first real long race was the Hawk 50.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, everybody that's so many people's run the race and everybody just has, just they always go back. It's one of those races that's it's just fun. Great aid stations and just a great atmosphere. So
yeah And so hopefully it won't rain this time. So,
yeah. So I have the Hawk 50 and then I go right into Heartland, I think is the next.
Okay. Great. Okay. Yeah. That's a good, you know, that's a good amount of recovery time for, to do a 50 and then 100.
Yeah. And then later, a week or 2 weeks, I think 2 weeks after Heartland, I'm signed up for the Walking Tall 50K and down in Tennessee. So, wow. Yeah. And that's, then after that, I am going to run Last Chance 100 again. So,
okay.
That one, I am bypassing Ozark Trail again this year. As much as I don't want to, I want to go back really bad, but I'm not going to go back this year. So I'm going to do Last Chance again. So,
okay. Okay. Well, cool. Cool.
Look, vindication at Last Chance this year. So,
yeah. So you're going to try Outlaw 100 again?
I'm already signed up for Outlaw 100.
Okay.
for Outlaw 100 about a week after the DNFs.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah. And that's something, I mean, I did the same thing after my DNF at the Hawk 100.
Yep. It's
like, yeah. Okay. I'm coming back next year. I've got to get this. And,
Yeah, and it's going to be all hands on deck. You're going to have to beat me with a stick to keep me from finishing it this time.
Yeah.
So
that's good. So, do you have any, and this is kind of something I try to ask, do you have a bucket list, race that you think is like, as you look out, I mean, something is like, yeah, that would be so cool if I could go and do that race.
Yeah. So I put in for two lotteries this year. I didn't get picked on either one of them. I put in for the Leadville lottery. This is my second year getting the denial email. I also put in for the High Lonesome 100 lottery and I didn't get picked this year. That's probably two going forward that I'm probably going to get in the lottery every year. Mm-hmm. I want one of those two races. I'd much rather do High Lonesome just because that is the epic mountain race, you know, high, deep, it's vert, it's on the Continental Divide. It's beautiful. It's kind of Leadville without all the bells and whistles.
Okay. So yeah,
I really want to do that race. I also, just a matter of time, I haven't done it yet. I am going to sign up for the Potawatomi, 100. So,
Okay.
Yeah. It went on the same weekend as Lake McMurtry and Gary Shaw, who I've been working with. He actually did his 200 up there this year. So he got his.
I didn't know they had their 200 as well.
Yeah, he got his 200 done at Pot this year. So
okay, wow.
He's just raving about the race. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So.
Yeah, it kind of gets to be that way. I mean, you hear about a race, it's like somebody else is, you know, somebody's done it. You hear, it's like, oh yeah, that would be, let's go do that.
Yeah. So that's kind of a bucket list thing. I think that next year, Outlaw, of course, I can't help but say it's not a bucket list race at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's one of those races that it's gonna eat your lunch. It's no joke. So to say it's not a bucket list finish, I would be completely being unfair to myself. And I'd be telling you a complete bold faced lie.
Yeah.
it's definitely a bucket list race.
I'd heard the race director designed it to have more elevation than Leadville. It doesn't have the altitude. So the air is, you know, the air is breathable.
Yeah.
But the actual total elevation is more than Leadville. Yeah. So,
Eric, I hate to do this, but I'm about to go dead on you. I got it.
Okay. Hey, yeah, and we're coming close to about an hour, which is where I kind of try to keep this. So
I got plenty more to talk about. So,
well, maybe we'll have to. I mean, you've got enough races coming on, so we'll have you back for a second episode or another.
Yeah, that completely works for me. I've. This year, I had a rocky start at Outlaw, but coming off a couple really good, feel-good, you know, finishes, and I'm just hope to keep it going. I'm kind of going into this year just a little bit a different mentality. I got a lot of stuff on the schedule, but I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm just going to enjoy it, have fun, make friends, and just enjoy this experience. You know, I keep saying, I kind of always put a tag on my post to say, I love this life, because, you know, we're doing some pretty awesome stuff. Yeah. And you know, once you sit back and take it all in, it's pretty special. You know, the people we get to meet, the stuff we get to see, we're pretty lucky. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I know if your phone's about to die, then we'll wrap this up. So thank you a lot for being here, and we'll have you back again. I mean, if you've got enough stuff going on, I want to have part two.
To this. All right. So yeah, I think it's part three at this point.
Hey, thanks a lot, Troy. I appreciate it. And I'll be looking forward to, and I'll have a link to your Facebook profile. If people want to follow your adventures, because you got a lot of adventures coming up as well. So thanks for the stories that you've shared here, and look forward to seeing you next time.
Eric, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.